Chapter 21, quote, "Break Earth's stupid rest," end quote. Mortal mind must waken to spiritual life before it cares to solve the problem of being. Hence the author's experience. But when that awakening comes, existence will be on a new standpoint. Mary Baker Eddy, 1905. The building of the Mother Church Extension was progressing as the new year dawned in 1905. But the real extension of the Mother's Church was the Divinity Course that was taught in her home at Pleasant View. Few students were qualified for this advanced teaching, and even among those few, many thought they were not taught the course because Mrs. Eddy did not assemble them in a classroom and say, quote, "This is the Divinity Course," end quote. The Divinity Course was putting into practice what every sincere, dedicated, consecrated student of science already knows. That is, to turn to infinite mind for absolutely everything, every minute of every day. Whether he knew it or not, Gilbert Carpenter was describing the Divinity Course when he said, "I can assert with conviction that Mrs. Eddy's home was the only place where I ever saw a perfectly consistent application of scientific demonstration in all matters. She made it a requirement that we must demonstrate all the material experiences of ordinary daily life and strive to see God back of everything, no matter how insignificant an incident might seem. The minutiae of life, which one is almost tempted to neglect, the questions of eating, sleeping, the commonplace daily necessities, are of the utmost importance from the spiritual standpoint, because they are the deep-rooted beliefs which bind man to dependence on matter. Thus, we perceive the deep spiritual insight of our leader in her insistence on demonstration in the non-essentials. She saw that although they appeared trifling to material sense, they represented the most important milestones of the students that will eventually win man that goal of freedom, freedom to depend wholly upon God. Practicing 24 hours a day is the most demanding, exacting, and exalting experience anyone can have. It is what Mrs. Eddy demanded of herself. It is also what she desired and required of those in her household without stating it in words. If they did not see and understand what was required, telling them would do no good. From the beginning of the Adam dream, the omnipotence and glory of God had been forgotten, and the world had been lulled to sleep by animal magnetism. The woman's great mission was to, quote, "break Earth's stupid rest," end quote. But alas, even the dear chosen students in her home were so glamored by animal magnetism that they often saw the leader's requirements as exacting and demanding rather than exalting. And this necessitated many lessons on animal magnetism. Most students had to be frightened by its aggressive features before they were willing to be awakened. They preferred to remain in the dream so long as it was pleasant. One day, while Mrs. Ella Peck Sweet was at Pleasant View, the leader asked her to repeat the definition of animal magnetism she had given in the classroom in 1887. Mrs. Sweet declared just as she had in the classroom. Quote, animal magnetism is the sum total of all error, and that in itself, nothing, until you attach belief to it. End quote. Once again, the leader clapped her hands in approval, just as she had done 17 years earlier. Mrs. Sweet was no longer at Pleasant View in January of 1905. Her arrangement had been to return to her home in Denver for Thanksgiving. Mr. Kinter would soon be returning to his home, already having stayed several months beyond the specified 1 year. Mrs. Eddy called the clerk of the Mother Church, William B. Johnson, one of her directors, to Pleasant View, temporarily until she found one qualified to come for the full year term. In mid-January, she was writing to one of her disciples, Mary Beecher Longyear, regarding an ambitious project this student had proposed. January 15th, 1905. My Mary and my disciple. God is moving on the face of the waters of your thought, and his creations will appear. I propose that the institution you found be called sanatorium, also that it be for teaching surgery, training nurses, teaching cooking, and healing the sick. Also, that it be a resort for invalids without homes or relatives, available in time of need, where they can go and recruit, etc. You, who are so capable of financial operations, can arrange all without my suggestion. Our cause demands a wider circle of means for the ends of philanthropy and charity, and better qualifications for practical purposes. This latter lack in students of Christian Science is a great hindrance to our cause, and it must be met and mastered. The students need to be qualified so that under the fire of mortal mind they can stand and, quote, having done all, to stand, end quote. St. Paul. Special notice of the present. Let none but yourself into this movement or know of it now. Do not rely on me at all, for I have not a half hour to spare, or a moment some days, and God with you is your majority. Keep your thoughts away from me, lest they bring too much of this world with them. And, dear one, this would surely not help you. I want this work done wholly apart from me. It was probably in January. It was a cold winter night, early in 1905, shortly before George Kinter returned to his home, that a very dramatic experience occurred. The household had retired for the night when Mrs. Eddy rang for Mr. Fry, which was not unusual, for she often worked day and night. But when the summons was unanswered, she rang for Mr. Kinter, who dashed through Mr. Fry's room as a shortcut and told Mrs. Eddy immediately that Mr. Fry was sitting in a chair in his room, looking as if he were in a coma. Mrs. Eddy sent George back to rouse Mr. Fry and rang for Laura Sargent. When Mr. Kinter reported that there was no sign of life, that Calvin's body was stone cold and stiff, with no perceptible pulse or breath, Mrs. Eddy got up from bed and went quickly to him. Bending over the sitting figure, she began making bold, audible declarations of truth. The house was icy cold, and Mrs. Eddy was in her nightdress, but she was oblivious of the protests of Laura Sargent and George Kinter, as she told Calvin to, quote, wake up and be the man God made, end quote. For over an hour, she continued to call him, unaware of what the others were doing for her. They wrapped her in a double blanket, and as she bent over Fry's form in a half-stooping position, Mr. Kinter supported her. Though she was unaware of their help, Mr. Kinter's back was aching an hour later when Calvin moved slightly and began to murmur, quote, don't call me back. Let me go. I am so tired, end quote. The leader refuted those suggestions, saying she most certainly would continue to call him back from that dream state, that he loved life and its activities too well to fall asleep, that he was freed from the thraldom of hypnotism and alive to God, his Savior from sin and death. Half an hour later, Calvin was completely recovered and everybody went back to bed. No one mentioned the incident, and life went on as usual the next day at Pleasant View. Although George Kinter did record the event in his reminiscences. The 28th of January saw a portent of things to come. Calvin Fry recorded in his diary that at 4:30 p.m., a messenger named Harding arrived from Washington, D.C., bearing a lengthy letter from her son, George W. Glover, a letter, quote, in which Glover virtually accuses her of not being competent to conduct her own business, end quote. That evening, Mrs. Eddy said to Calvin, quote, I am going to give George some history about you and let him know how faithful you have been to me, end quote. The historian wonders, with whom was George Glover visiting in Washington, D.C.? Mr. Fry asked Gilbert Carpenter to come to Concord on January 30th to discuss finding a suitable maid for Mrs. Eddy. But it would appear that the leader had more than the maid in mind when she talked with Mr. and Mrs. Carpenter that day. Gilbert C. Carpenter. It was 1894 when Mr. and Mrs. Carpenter became interested in Christian Science, a time when the emerging Christian Science churches either had pastors or did their own thing. Some held Sunday school for adults. Mr. Carpenter said, quote, when I first attended services in Providence, Rhode Island, they consisted wholly of an informal discussion of the lesson in the quarterly, led by Eugene H. Green, end quote. It was 4 years later, in May of 1898, that the Carpenters wrote Mrs. Eddy what Gilbert had found and unfolded in researching the word Eddy. The leader responded to Mrs. Carpenter on May 22, 1898. My dear Mrs. Carpenter, your kind letter at hand. The interpretation is quite noticeable in some directions. God grant that I be found not wanting in the direction that runs heavenward. The stream of our lives meets with much resistance, but there is a hope beyond earth's ebb and flow. May you and all find the shoreless sea, where life is infinite, and all that seems to be and is not is swallowed up in the reality of life and love. With thanks and love, Mary Baker Eddy. The Carpenters were sincere young students who idealized the Revelator to this age. and knew nothing about animal magnetism. They wrote to Mrs. Eddy on July 20, 1900, Providence, Rhode Island. Beloved Mother, it has been in the thought of some of your loved little ones in this city to send to you some permanent expression of their love and appreciation. Now that the world is getting more and more to realize the freedom that you have brought to it, would it be to your liking to have us erect a flagpole at Pleasant View, 100 feet high, with a flag that could be seen by the dwellers at Concord, the pole surmounted by a woman's head and shoulders, supported by 2 eagle's wings? If this, our pleasure, should be yours, would Concord Day, quote, Old Home Week, end quote, be too soon to expect to unfurl the flag to the breeze? Our courage to write this letter came from opening the Bible to Jeremiah 51, verse 27, quote, Set ye up a standard in the land, end quote. If you should feel that this plan or any of its details are not just what you would like to see brought out at Pleasant View, it would be our pleasure to express our thought some other way. For, dear Mother, our hearts are full, and it is our prayer to be found worthy to touch the hem of your garment. Lovingly, your children, Mr. and Mrs. Gilbert C. Carpenter. In later years, when Gilbert had crossed swords with animal magnetism and learned that Pleasant View was, quote, Fort besieged, end quote, as long as the leader was there, he knew how immature his suggestion had been. But it is sad that those who, quote, bought, end quote, Pleasant View under the terms of Mrs. Eddy's will, did not follow through with this rare gift at that time, and set, quote, up a standard in the land, end quote, as Mrs. Eddy's answer implied could be done. July 25th, 1900. Beloved students, your dear letter would have been answered sooner, but for innumerable duties to be done. Your conception and design is very fine. Your proposed gift is a rare one, grand and illustrative. But my dear friends, so little is the world up to or near your thought. It would be a pearl cast before swine. And you know, Jesus saith, that such is trampled upon. I think that now is not the time for the erection of such a storied flagpole. If I should at any future time sell Pleasant View to a student, he could have that erected properly. But I have not the sense that it is best to be done while I occupy the place. With grateful appreciation of your high thought and dear desire to do this for me, I close. May our God give you joy for contemplating it. Give the dear grand students who thought of it with you my love and thanks. May the wings of the eagle be thine to mount upwards in Christian Science, and divine love be and abide with you. With love, Mother, Mary Baker Eddy. In 1901, Mrs. Eddy had Mr. Carpenter elected a first member of the Mother Church, and in 1902, she had him appointed to the building committee of the Mother Church Extension. At about this same time, Mr. Carpenter became aware, through Mr. Mann, that Mrs. Eddy's sleigh was in need of new bells, which he hastened to supply. The salutation on Mrs. Eddy's letter of thanks is noteworthy. December 21st, 1902. Mr. Gilbert C. Carpenter, Christian Scientist, beloved student, you will please accept my warm thanks for the pretty sleigh bells you sent to me. I love to hear their silver tones over the snow, and think of your kindness to contribute to Mother's 1 hour cheery vacation from the desk. May the coming Christmas bring you additional joy and advancing footsteps outward, onward, upward, is the prayer of Mother. Ever yours, M.B.G. Eddy. P.S. I had the pleasure of learning of your acceptance of the place on our church building committee, and was greatly pleased, therefore. Again, M.B.E. It was probably sometime in 1903 that Mr. Carpenter had his first interview with Mrs. Eddy. She had called him to Pleasant View to talk with him regarding his securing a new carriage for her. Afterward, when he recorded the interview, he wrote, quote, "I found that in the course of half an hour's talk, she had answered every question on Christian Science that had been troubling me over a period of 2 years. Yet I had not voiced one of them." End quote. It was arranged that Mr. Carpenter would have a carriage built for Mrs. Eddy according to her specifications. After selecting a firm in Taunton, he and Mrs. Carpenter journeyed there every day for many weeks, supervising every detail. On the day it was finally delivered, Mrs. Eddy exclaimed, quote, "Isn't it a dandy?" End quote. This lovely carriage was probably the one that was delivered in 1904 and gave August Mann and John Salcho a problem to solve. It may have been after her first drive, when descending from the carriage, her heel caught in the openwork pattern of the new iron steps. The leader's direction to correct the situation caused August Mann to order new steps immediately and to take the unsatisfactory ones to a carriage building firm to be adjusted for temporary use. 2 hours later, the original steps had been spoiled beyond use, and when the new ones arrived, they proved to be duplicates of the openwork steps. John Salcho wrote, "Such instances as this had early shown me that error was always trying to tell those who worked for Mrs. Eddy that they could not carry out her instructions. She herself talked with me and taught me how to resist these arguments and to meet the belief of reversal. I had learned to be awake to the error and to protect myself against it. After her few talks with me, I saw that if I did not meet the arguments, that I could not do what was expected of me, I would fail Mrs. Eddy and be of no use to her. So I never questioned her instructions, but did my best to carry them out." On this occasion, he told August to start a fire in the forge. John had been interested in ironwork since boyhood and had set up a small forge at Pleasant View. Then, almost to his amazement, he came upon a piece of iron, almost exactly the right size, lying upon a little piece of lawn that was mowed regularly each week. It was not unlike the silver in the fish's mouth. John Salcho wrote, "Where it had come from, I do not know, for I had never seen such a piece of iron around the place before. But there it was, just as if it had been deliberately placed there for me. I had chisels and tools of my own, and was able to cut the iron to just the size to fit inside the rim of the steps. When completed, it made a perfect step. Minnie McDonald, Victoria Sargent's daughter, who served at both Pleasant View and Chestnut Hill, once said to John Salcho, quote, "If Mother told you to hang a lantern on the moon, you'd try it," end quote. To which John responded, quote, "Well, if she told me to do it, there would be a way to do it," end quote. Anything that was done for Mrs. Eddy as a spiritual demonstration was always satisfactory. But few students turned first to God in their efforts to help their leader, and very few Christian Scientists had any idea that the discoverer and founder ever needed any help. They imagined that her life was one of serene bliss. A student had to be wakened from this beautiful dream, and his eyes opened to the attempts of evil to destroy the Christ idea before he understood how to work effectually. The time had come for the awakening of Mr. and Mrs. Carpenter. It was the first time they had been invited to Pleasant View for a visit, and little did they expect that they were to be jolted by the aggressive features of animal magnetism on that lovely day. Mrs. Eddy arranged the seating, placing one on each side of her on the sofa. She held their hands in hers, and then she told them the story of Dr. Eddy's being arrested for murder. Such sinister motives had never entered the thoughts of these young people, and the uncoverings in this long, dark episode seemed horrible to them. But it caused them to ponder ever afterwards, and it began their awakening. At the close of the visit, Mrs. Eddy apologized for spending the whole time in telling about such an incident and told them they must come again soon. Before she would let us go, she insisted that we see her banner picturing a shepherd carrying a lamb, with the quotation from the Song of Solomon. Quote, "His banner over me was love," end quote. She said, quote, "I have carried the little lambs in my arms just like that," end quote. Little did the Carpenters realize that she had been carrying them in her arms that very day, while opening their eyes to the insidiousness of evil. It was in the spring of 1904 that Mr. Carpenter became aware that Mrs. Eddy was in need of a new team of horses. An article in the Boston Journal stated, "Mrs. Mary Baker Eddy would not have the finest pair of carriage horses in America. She said, when she looked such a pair over, quote, they are a pair of devils sent to kill me," end quote. The team had been selected by J. M. Osborne of Paris, Kentucky, who had instructions to buy the best team of carriage horses in the United States. Mrs. Eddy made the expression quoted in a letter to T. L. L. Temple of Texarkana, Arkansas, who had sent her the team as a gift. The team consisted of the Blue Ribbon winners, Tattersall and Eckersall. They cost Mr. Temple $10,000, and Mr. Osborne accompanied the horses to the home of Mrs. Eddy and tried to persuade her to ride behind them. They remained in her stables but a few days, when she had them shipped back to the donor. And Mr. Temple is using them on his carriage. Mr. Osborne may have been one of the committees that had been searching the country for a suitable pair of horses for Mrs. Eddy. Her old span had misbehaved too often to be kept much longer, and her directors had appointed more than one such committee. Mr. Carpenter discussed the situation with August Mann, and the imminence of the need caused him to join the search. He spent the next 30 days visiting sales, stables, and every other possible source, all to no avail. Then, one morning, I realized that I had spent 30 days fruitlessly. I proceeded, therefore, to wake myself up mentally by realizing that God has a pair of horses for this dear one who loves and trusts Him and who has sacrificed her human all in the effort to establish His kingdom on earth. I then declared that it was time my dull eyes were opened to see this fact manifested. On the way to my office, I saw a pair of horses harnessed to a carriage. I recognized those horses as the manifestation of my demonstration for our leader, as plainly as if I had raised them from colts. The owner said that the horses were not for sale. But on April 5th, 1904, Mr. Carpenter had a bill of sale making him the owner of Princess and Dolly. The next morning, August Mann came to approve the pair, and soon thereafter, Mr. Carpenter arranged for their shipment to Concord. On her daily drive, one of her old span misbehaved once more, and Mrs. Eddy said to Mr. Mann, quote, "I cannot drive with these horses any longer. Do you know where I can get another pair?" August responded delightedly, quote, "Yes, mother, they are in the stable," end quote. For Princess and Dolly had just arrived at Pleasant View the day before. However, Mrs. Eddy would not even look at the horses until she had sent for Mr. Carpenter and heard his story, following which she said, quote, "Then you demonstrated them?" End quote. When he assured her that he had, she said, quote, "Then I can keep them," end quote. May 10th, 1904. Mr. Gilbert C. Carpenter, Christian Scientist, beloved student. I am told by Mr. Mann and Mr. Fry that you have made the gift to me of one of the finest spans of horses I ever owned. I did not look for such largesse. It seemed enough that you should search and find them for me. I feel bankrupt in thanks. Words cannot express my gratitude to you. It is the dearest, the best, the most needed gift I ever received. What shall I do to repay you? I can only say, call on me in an hour of need, and I will try to help thee. Give my love to Mrs. Carpenter. I deeply enjoyed my few minutes with you both. Ever gratefully, lovingly, your leader, Mary Baker Eddy. In his response, Mr. Carpenter wrote, "The offer of a sheltering harbor, if my faith should fail, more than compensates for the little the foresight of your household has put in my way to do for you. Should I devote my life and all my substance to help make your life more comfortable during its earthly sojourn, I should still be your debtor. My week's stay at Pleasant View taught me more practical Christian science than is accorded to most of humanity, and for this I desire to return thanks. That you should have taken your priceless time to have seen us personally has touched me deeply and will never be forgotten, but only makes the demands more imperative to demonstrate more of Christian Science. On the 30th of January in 1905, Mrs. Eddy talked with Mr. and Mrs. Carpenter at Pleasant View on the subject of finding a suitable maid for her. Mr. Carpenter said, quote, "If we are good enough, God will show me someone for your helper," end quote. A little later in the conversation, he said, quote, "It is a privilege to suffer for Christ," end quote. And Mrs. Eddy asked him if he was willing to leave his business, his family, and all to come and serve her. He promptly answered, yes. When she asked about his family, he told her he had three children, the eldest 8-year-old Gilbert Jr., and the youngest a 2-year-old toddler. Next, the leader asked Mr. Carpenter, quote, "Would you be willing to let your wife come and serve me for 1 year?" He answered unhesitatingly and unreservedly, yes. Mrs. Eddy then talked with Mrs. Carpenter, who agreed to come in 2 days, provided her babe could be allowed to come occasionally to see her. As it turned out, when the call came a few weeks later, Mrs. Carpenter was pregnant with their fourth child. So it was Mr. Carpenter who went to Pleasant View for a year.